every innovation doesn't have to disrupt.
Right.
I mean, there could be, yes, there are inventive innovations and disruptive innovations, but there's also innovations to do existing things better, move things along a maturity curve when the organization is ready to be able to change the way you're doing something. Mm-hmm. So it could be something very new, and it could be something you've always done, but now have figured out a way to do better.
Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Lindsay Resnick. I'm Executive Vice President of Wunderman Thompson Health, which is part of the WPP network of companies.
Awesome. Lindsay, thanks so much for finding time to join us on the Ivy Podcast today. Very excited to start the 2021 with this conversation. Tell us a little bit more about your background and your highlights from your career, and then I want to spend a couple of minutes talking about your current role.
Sure. So I spent the first half of my career on the health insurance and healthcare side. Interestingly, and I know we're going to take the conversation later to current day, but I did way back start at Northeastern University in Boston, which is famous for its co-op program, which really got me started in healthcare, where you go to school for 6 months and then they place you in work where you think you want to go. And, you know, I played around with accounting, I played around with marketing, and finally found healthcare and have been in healthcare ever since with Blue Cross Blue Shield and some commercial health insurance organizations. And then about halfway through, and I've always had responsibility for marketing, sales, sometimes compliance. And then about halfway through my career, I flipped over to pure marketing and advertising side of things. And then for the last 10 years, I've been at Wunderman Thompson Health, which is a marketing and advertising data-driven organization. Our part of that organization just focused in healthcare.
Awesome. Wow, that's exciting. You know, thanks for sharing with us a little bit about your background. In terms of your current role, what falls under your purview? Share with us anything that's interesting from that particular space.
Sure. So Wunderman Thompson Health cuts across the entire healthcare spectrum. Part of our organization is more heavily focused in the pharmaceutical side of the business. My group focuses on organizations that sort of are responsible for paying for healthcare, so health insurance companies, as well as providing it, provider organizations and health technology companies. My role is sort of a combination of business development, marketing, and thought leadership for our niche in that business, and then client advisory council. So strategies, where they should look at what's coming next in the marketplace.
Very interesting. I want to talk a little bit more about this. But before we do, I want to get your perspective on a topic that I'm very passionate about. I talk to a lot of executives on this podcast, is all around innovation. Because for every executive, I'm pretty sure, you know, yourself included, innovation at the forefront in terms of how do we continuously innovate, make things better, whether internally or for our customers and so forth. Tell us, what does innovation mean to you? And then moreover, as far as strategies or any recommendations, as far as what has worked well for you or maybe didn't, what have you learned through the process when it comes to building and fostering that culture of innovation?
Yeah. I mean, I guess from the back end of that question, every innovation doesn't have to disrupt.
Right.
I mean, there could be, yes, there are inventive innovations and disruptive innovations, but there's also innovations to do existing things better, move things along a maturity curve when the organization is ready to be able to change the way you're doing something. Mm-hmm. Yes, it could be something very new, and it could be something you've always done, but now have figured out a way to do better. One of the interesting things right now that I'm seeing is innovation through collaboration, which basically says to an organization, listen, you're an organization that's good at certain things. There may be people in the market that do other things better that you may need to do or latch on to what you do today. And there's nothing wrong with a collaborative partnership like that. And we're seeing a lot of that in healthcare right now. So you're seeing Walgreens, for example, partner with a primary care delivery organization. So they will use their clinics and it'll be co-branded with a Walgreens. So we're seeing a lot of that collaboration. I think that's a good thing.
Yep. No, absolutely. I love what you said about, initially the kind of the perception of innovation doesn't necessarily have to be disruptive, industry changing type of thing. It could be as small as, improvement to an existing process or something, and innovating through experimentation as well. It's something that's, an interesting concept and I love some of the examples that you have provided. So appreciate that. In terms of some of the trends or ideas that really excite you these days, whether that's, in healthcare space and marketing or, anything outside of that, share with us what's on the mind of Lindsay. What are you researching? What would you invest in? What do you predict to be the next kind of really impactful trend in the short period?
Yeah. So interesting and linked, a segue from the conversation we just had. One of the things that I've done is I'm doing some mentoring at a health technology accelerator here in Chicago. And there's also one in the same building that's not healthcare specific. Mm-hmm. These are organizations where generally it is an invention or it is something new, and it's brought as an idea or, an initial business plan from a group of engineers or a group of physicians, that they're not lawyers. They're not generally marketers. They don't know how to go to market. So working with those has really kept me in touch with what's happening in my side of the industry. And I'm sure it would be the same thing in transportation or any other. So as sort of podcast word of advice, if people have the opportunity to do that, A, it's a little bit of give back. And B, it's a way to really keep your head into what's happening in terms of innovation. So I've been mentoring a company that came up with something very simple. It's a sensor that goes under a mattress for a senior citizen. And when they get up in the middle of the night, the lights to the bathroom go on because that's the most likely of an incidence of them falling. Mm. And then if they don't get back in bed, a notice goes out to either someone they've identified in the community as a caregiver or the front desk at an assisted living facility. So they know the person needs to be checked on. Wow. So these kinds of innovations, and there's just right now a ton of them in the healthcare sector. If you track the Consumer Electronics Show,
right,
which cuts across all industries, the healthcare section of that show has just boomed. Mm-hmm. From remote monitoring to every aspect of healthcare that you could think of. So you really now have to build that in to, it's almost a new site of care for people. Mm-hmm. People could be at home and don't have to go to an office or a facility. That's been, accelerated because of COVID. But now you're going to see things for your healthcare at home that is really transformational.
Well, that's very interesting. And, you know, that one example that you gave, you know, the device for senior citizens, that sounds pretty cool in terms of, you know, that innovation being born out of necessity. It's, you know, that quote that really stuck with me when I interviewed CTO of L'Oreal, and that's what all he spoke about from that perspective. So that's a good example, kind of result of that. You've mentioned initially data-driven marketing. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? You know, everything is data these days. A lot of buzzwords. But when it comes to big data, a lot of, you know, data science, data warehousing, all of that, great concepts. You know, very sexy. But at the same time, when it comes to the actual, you know, implementation and leveraging of data to make certain decisions, data-driven approach, or, you know, actionable data, it's a little bit of a different story. So yeah. I'm curious to get your perspective on that. How do you make that work? What things to look out for? Anything from, you know, high level perspective? I know it's a very loaded question, but yeah. any insights from there, that would be great.
Yeah. And in marketing right now, there's that fine line between using data to best to know your customer really well. And the line is, or getting a little too creepy, mm-hmm. like, you know, a little too much about me that I'm comfortable with. But when I say data-driven, yeah, it is all around this big data, but it's also the best way to know your customer. And mm-hmm. and for marketing now, whether I'm marketing to someone who is thinking about enrolling in a Medicare plan, or I'm thinking about someone who's going to go buy something, a product at Best Buy, there's things that you could know about that potential customer. Are they online shoppers or not online shoppers? Generational information, you know, so some of the basic demographic, but also social media habits and a whole range of lifestyle, life stage indicators that let you take the right products to the right people. And, you know, the ability to do that is efficiency from a marketing dollar standpoint, and connection from, am I connecting with the person who this product best suits, or am I just throwing it up against the wall? Right. In a healthcare example is telemedicine, where a lot of people have access to it now. I think upwards of 80% of employers, large employers, offer it. But they were sort of just throwing it out there, or when people were in offices, there would be a poster in the lunchroom about it. But the uptake was, nobody was using it. It was single digit. Right. Now, COVID changed that game, granted, but what also changed the game was companies that started saying, well, who's using it? Millennial moms. Well, let's message different to millennial moms than the pre-retiree who may have different reasons or different motivations from calling. So it's part of, how do you motivate someone to take an action? Mm-hmm. And I contend the best way to do that, and the data is available, is through data.
Very interesting. And, you know, thanks for some of these insights, and couldn't agree more with you as far as, you know, also iterating, really starting from, you know, starting smaller without trying to do the whole, you know, the entire transformation when it comes to, you know, leveraging of data, using data for decision-making capabilities. So that's very interesting. You know, I'm pretty sure we can talk about that particular topic for the rest of the podcast, but we'll keep moving. There's, you know, something I want to talk to you about is, I'm pretty sure that's also, as an executive, it's at the top of your mind 24/7. It's really evolves around surrounding yourself with, you know, the best people, with A-plus players, someone that, you know, really, you know, helps you take your, not only your personal productivity, but also everything around that you're responsible for to, you know, to greater heights. So first question, when candidates interview with you, give us a glimpse into interview with Lindsay. What does that look like? Do you keep it pretty traditional, or do you get creative? So any insight into that process would be appreciated.
Sure. You know, I guess one would say I keep it pretty traditional. You know, I don't ask, you know, if they were put in a blender and had, you know, one thing to get at. But there are things that I'm looking for.
Right.
And, you know, one of them is, do they listen? Mm-hmm. Which sounds basic, but listening inside an organization is critical. What are they going to be like to have on a team, and their work, how are they going to work on a team? So, you know, I may probe around past experiences in terms of team collaboration.
Right.
And then so two pet peeves of mine that I try to make sure I'm addressing is curiosity. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing I dislike more than someone inside my organization asking me a question, and it takes me, you know, under 5 minutes to do a quick Google search and find the answer out. That they didn't do that first and come to me and say, you know, I've looked everywhere. Am I hiring a person who has a high degree of curiosity? And, you know, this probably sounds old school, et cetera, but work ethic. Mm-hmm. You know, is it someone who's just looking for a job, or are they looking for something they're going to be passionate about?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could say, well, who joins a health insurance company, for example, and is passionate about it? Well, there are things in, maybe you're passionate about marketing, or maybe you're passionate about helping someone manage their care. Well, those passions can be realized inside a health insurance company or inside a marketing organization. There may be different things.
Right.
And then from a skill base, I would say that writing is something that, you know, whether it is core to a particular position, it's something that I look for and try to probe around with somebody.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, absolutely. No, I love these examples, especially, you know, you mentioned, which seems as, you know, very basic in terms of listening, but a lot of times is, you know, often, you know, overlooked. You know, there's one question that I really like to ask when I interview candidates is something around, you know, if I was to talk to your current manager, what do you think they will say is that candidate's greatest weakness? And a lot of mm-hmm. times the candidates mistake that immediately, start jumping into my greatest weakness is, and without realizing the question is all around your, you know, self-awareness of what the other person thinks is your weakness.
Right.
So it just kind of goes hand in hand with what you were talking about. So for our listeners, if you are going to be interviewing with Lindsay, you have some insider information on the interview process. So thanks for sharing that. Those are some great advice. And when it comes to, you know, attracting and retaining the top talent for your teams, what are some of the strategies that really have worked well for you in the past or currently that you're utilizing that really help you, you know, surround yourself and attract, you know, really the top talent in the industry?
You know, I think it's obviously where you look for that talent, but it's also are there pieces of what I'm looking for that someone can grow into?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm in the healthcare business and I'm looking for a marketer, it probably behooves me to look for the best marketer and I'll help them get the healthcare knowledge they need. Or it may be vice versa, but it depends on what you're looking for from a position standpoint, but it may not always have to be someone from inside the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's important. Saying that, I've seen it work both ways. So I've seen that, you know, at the executive level, you know, someone we're going to bring someone in from the airline business into run a Blue Cross Blue Shield plan. I'd say there's been mixed results with that. You know, maybe a great manager, brilliant person, but at certain levels, there's certain things about an industry and industry knowledge and history in an industry that I think are important. So it's a balance, but I'll go back to the point. There's things that someone can learn on the job and be one of your best hires.
Right, right, absolutely. That's very interesting. And then as we were talking about interviewing, you mentioned, you know, a couple of critical skill sets, you know, such as writing and listening. What else would you highlight as far as most in demand yet very hard to find skill set in your industry? And how do you go about addressing that need?
It may get back to your innovation. Mm-hmm. Is it somebody that is going to be able to see beyond a job description, or see beyond what the traditional position may entail to be able to go to new directions with it? So, you know, I guess that's a future thinker, or, you know, somebody that can take something and bring a lot of what ifs. We did it this way, or what if we went over here?
Right. I agree with that, because especially now with, you know, shifting completely to remote, you know, virtual mm-hmm. world, these types of skill sets, you know, there's even a greater light shining on that ability to collaborate remotely and, you know, thinking outside the box, but also relaying that message when you're collaborating with your teammates or your superiors or your direct reports remotely. I think that becomes even a greater challenge. And that communication skill set is, you know, is paramount in that particular environment. So that's very interesting. Lindsay, from perspective of your, what I like to call content diet, what are your sources of information? What are your sources for learning? Share with us any, whether that's a bookmark of a blog or it's a Twitter profile that you follow. Tell us what are you reading these days in terms of
self-improvement? So under the category for better or worse, right? I do follow and look at certain Twitter people, mm-hmm. From a healthcare standpoint and a marketing standpoint. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say there's also probably 4 daily newsletters that I go to that are more industry based. Mm-hmm. So I can start the day knowing I'm up to date on what's happened around the healthcare and insurance business and what's happened as that relates to in Washington. I'm fairly active on LinkedIn. But again, you know, so some of these things wind up being your bubble.
Yeah, right.
Which, you know, good news or bad news, right? But I also try to look at a couple of newspapers, well, Wall Street Journal and a local newspaper, Sunday New York Times, you know, just to get the range.
Gotcha. Absolutely. Yeah, that's very interesting. And, you know, you've nailed it when it comes to kind of living in that little bubble, especially when it comes to your specific, whether that's industry or personal interest. So that, you know, there's a lot of opportunities there. And furthermore, but last but not least, is twofold question is, what are you currently reading when it comes to a book? And if that's different from the book that you always recommend to others, what is that, and why do you recommend it?
Okay, so I'm not going to bullshit you. I'm not reading the extensive history of Winston Churchill. If I have reading downtime, I'm going to go to David Balducci, John Grisham, Nelson DeMille, and read some mystery spy trash.
Right. Okay.
from a business perspective, the book I have been recommending is called Getting Naked by Pat Lencioni. Hmm. And I recommend it to you because you look like you haven't read it.
Yep. I haven't heard about it, but definitely going to check it out.
It's really about business transparency. and not being afraid to give something away for free in fear, oh, then they won't buy anything else from me. And really, in it's about a little consulting firm that keeps beating the big dogs on new business. And the big dogs say, go in there and look at it and let's just buy it. And what they go in is they go in and they have honest, open discussions and they say, maybe you should look at the, you know, and they're very transparent about the strategy or the advice they're going to deliver. And sure, someone could walk away and go, boy, that's good. I went fishing and I got something. But it's really the bigger strategy. And 9 times out of 10, those people came back and bought the smaller services of the smaller insurance, of the smaller consulting firm. And it's an easy read. And it's told in a story about a big company buying this little company and then how the little company tries to change once it's got acquired. Very relevant to what's going on right now. Yes, in the consulting world, but B, in the integration, there's so much merger and acquisition activity and consolidation in most industries right now. You could be, as an outsider, know which ones are going to do it right and which ones are just not going to leverage all the value. They think just by getting rid of one of the HR departments, you know, condensing legal, you know, some of the administrative stuff, then we've made our business synergies, quote unquote. Well, there's a lot more that these organizations can do to integrate to really get the value of a combined organization. It doesn't happen all the time.
Wow, very interesting. I'm definitely going to add that to my growing list of books I need to read. And for our listeners, we'll make the title and author of these books available in the episode notes. Lindsay, can't thank you enough for your time today. It was a very short but very insightful conversation. Personally learned quite a bit. Definitely going to stay in touch with you, and perhaps we can do another episode in the near future, probably in a year, see how much have changed, transpired, and we'll stay in touch. Much appreciated.
Sure. Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.